Morning. Today's daf is daf Peches and Ksuvos. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is long as Echnesh Maslibe Gabriela Bashmuel. We are on Pezayin Amud Beis, and we are coming off of a Mishnah. Mishnah is discussing a number of scenarios where if a woman's going to collect her ksuva, she's going to have to make a shvua. First case that we described in the Mishnah is Pegimas HaKsuva. So she puts a nick in her ksuva. That does not mean that she makes an actual indentation in her ksuva, but she makes an admission that she got partial payment to her ksuva. So they go to court, and she says, I'm holding the ksuva in my hand, but I'm going to admit, though, that I got part of the payment to the ksuva, and I'd like to now receive the remainder of the balance. So in order for her to collect the balance, so she has to make a shvua. At first, the Gemara thought yesterday that this is a shvua d'oraisa, because it certainly sounds a lot like modem b'miksas. Right? Sounds like a partial admission, but the Gemara points out it's not modem b'miksas. I mean, it is a partial admission, but it doesn't fit under the strict rules of what would constitute a shvua d'oraisa. So first of all, a lot of today's discussion, if not most of... almost all of today's discussion is going to revolve around Shavua. So just, I'm sure we all know this, but it always bears repeating. Minat Torah, there are only three Shavuas. That is Shavua Modem B'Miksas, a partial admission. Shavua Seid Echad, when one witness says that you owe money. And finally, Shavua Sapikadon, if you're a custodian and you want to relieve yourself from the liability in the scenario where, of course, you could relieve yourself from liability. In other words, where, if as long as you're telling the truth, then you wouldn't be liable. So in all three of those circumstances, the Torah obligates you to make a Shavua. Okay, if you remember Masech Teshavuos, or if you were looking forward to it, either side you are in Daf Yomi, So you'll remember that there's a host of other shvuos that are imposed by the Chachamim. There are differences between a shvuah d'oraisa and a shvuah d'rabbanan. Yesterday we saw Rashi. Rashi said on the top of Pezayin Amud Beis that one difference between them is that by shvuah d'oraisa, either you make the shvuah or you don't make the shvuah. As opposed to shvuah d'rabbanan, where if you can't make the shvuah, so then it flips over to the other person and the other litigant is then able to make the shvuah. That's one difference between a shvuah d'oraisa and a shvuah d'rabbanan. Later this morning, I'll show you another Rashi on Peches Amud Aleph, where Rashi gives another distinction as well. Okay, but those are the Shvuas Min HaTorah. The Shvuah D'oraisa is more chamur, it's a more strict Shvuah, and you'll see later on, people are more scared of a Shvuah D'oraisa than a Shvuah D'rabbanan. Okay, I don't have all the psychology to explain that. It could be there just also basic legal ramifications of why that should be so. But okay, what the Gemara observed from our Mishnah is that our Mishnah seems to be a Shvuah D'oraisa, at least that's what Rami Bar Chama thought. Again, I'm just reviewing from yesterday. So the Gemara points out, Rava says to Rami Bar Chama, that's not correct. Meaning, our Mishnah is not a Shavua D'oraisa, it is only a Shavua D'rabbanan. How do we know that? For two reasons. Number one, he says that in every case in the Torah, you are obligated to make a Shavua and you will be exempt from having to pay. So in other words, a classic case of Modem B'Miksas is, let's say, Ben comes over to me and he says to me, $100, right? Remember I lent it to you? So I said to him, yeah, sure, I remember. But I 50 of it I paid already, and I only owe you 50. Let's keep it simple. I owe you, but I only owe you 50. Okay, so that's the case of modem b'miksas. So obviously I'll pay the 50 that I say I owe, but what about the other 50? In other words, obviously now we're contesting over that other 50. So that's modem b'miksas. That's a partial admission. According to the Torah, I'm going to make a shvuah so that I don't have to pay. Okay, that's modem b'miksas from the Torah standpoint. Think about what's happening over here.
You don't have to pay the first 50?
No, I admit I owe 50. I'll pay that. But the other 50, which I say I don't know, so that I'm not going to pay, but the Torah says you're obligated to make a shvuah. Then now, they think about what's going on over here. In our case, the woman is admitting that she received part of the payment. But now she wants the balance. So she's going to make a shvuah to collect the balance. That's what's called nishba venoto. She's going to make a shvuah and she's going to take. That's not a shvuah min haTorah, that's a shvuah min haRabbanan. So for that reason, and that reason alone would be enough to tell us that this is not a shvuah d'oraisa, it's a shvuah d'Rabbanan. But there's another reason also that tells us that this is a shvuah d'Rabbanan, not a d'oraisa, and that's for the following. We're talking about a ksuva. Now a ksuva is not really a loan. I'll say it even better, say it clearer. It's not a loan. It's a contracted obligation that upon death or divorce is what I'm going to pay you. So and primarily, as we spent a lot of time discussing, primarily what's securing that obligation? Property. In other words, it's a shibud karka. We know, again, it's a basic rule in the world of shuos, ein nishban al karka. You don't make a shvuah on property. The ksuva is equivalent to property. There's a shibud karka on the ksuva. Therefore, it's if left to Torah law, you wouldn't be making a shvuah on a ksuva since it's principally property. Good. So for these two reasons, it's not a Shavua D'Oraisa, it's a Shavua D'Rabbanan. That's fine. Why did the rabbis impose a Shavua upon her? So this also Rav explained yesterday is because, generally speaking, in a relationship between the payer and the payee, so generally speaking, the payer is more careful about how much money is coming out of his pocket, meaning that's money that he's parting with, that's money he's separating with. So that's not easy to part with money. So he's going to count, and he's going to make sure that he knows exactly how much he's paying. The payee, so that person, generally speaking, obviously, you know, in other words, he'll want to know, she'll want to know how much she's getting, but won't be that careful. If she admits that she got a partial payment, so now he's looking at her saying, okay, really? So you know exactly how much you got? Can you swear to how much you got? So that's why the Chacham imposed a Shavua upon her, because he knows exactly how much he gave. She may not be particularly sure about, or at least he thinks that she may not be particularly sure about how much she received. That's why the Chacham imposed a Shavua. That is all what we did yesterday. Let's continue. In the Gemara, we are now on Pei Zayin Amud Beis. Ibayilahu. That's about a third of the way down in Pei Zayin Amud Beis. The first one on the line is the Tidok. And the Gemara is going to ask a series of questions regarding this case of Pogem Ksuva. Pogemis Ksuva. We're talking about the woman. Ibayilahu Pogemis Ksuva Be'edemahu. So question number one of the Gemara, let's say that there was a partial payment. And the first installment of the payment to the ksuva was done in front of witnesses, and now she comes to takes her husband to base and says, "Okay, I want the balance. The first installment came with witnesses. Now I would like the balance." Does she have to make a shvua in that case? Why wouldn't she have to make a shvua? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Im isa depara be'edim hava parla, because look, the husband obviously wants to make sure that people know that he paid. So, and it's pretty clear because the first installment that he paid, he did so in front of Adam. Now she's coming along and she's saying, okay, but there's a balance. The argument you could make, which is what the Gemara is now making, is that he didn't pay this balance, because if the first installment is paying in front of Adam, the second installment also, he would have paid in front of Adam. There are no Adam for that second installment. It's got to be she's right. So maybe there's no shvua in such a scenario. Oh, Dilma, it's Rami Yisramele. Oh, the Gemara says, or you could just simply argue, look, there were witnesses for that first installment, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he got the witnesses there for that first installment. It just happens to be that they were there. Okay, so the Gemara says, and therefore it's a classic case of Pegimas Ksuva. She's asking for the balance. He's not comfortable with her knowing exactly how much she got paid, so therefore she's going to have to make a shvua in order to collect the balance. Tashma. Gemara turns to a Mishnah in Shvuos. Kol nishman shebatar nishman v'lo mishamim. From the Torah standpoint, the only shvuos are there, a shvua that you make so that you don't have to pay, like we discussed earlier this morning. The English nishman v'notlin. However, there are a number of scenarios where you're going to make a shvua and you're going to collect money. Needless to say, but I'll say it, all these cases are shvuos de rabbanan, meaning these are rabbinically imposed shvuos because, from the Torah standpoint, there's no such animal. There's no such thing as a shvua that is there to collect money. The shvua is only there to prevent you from having to pay. So what are the cases of nishba v'notlin, where you make a shvua so you could take? So we're going to go through a number of cases. Sachir, it's a mishnah shvuos. Sachir, the employee says to his employer, okay, you didn't pay me this week. And the employer says, no, I did. And so this is a scenario where the sachir is given the opportunity to make a shvua so that he gets paid. Nigzal, a person was the victim of theft, and he takes the thief to court, and the the issue of theft is not an issue. Meaning, as Rashi points out, we all know that he went into the house, the witnesses saw him go into the house. We all saw him walk out with something. And so now it's just a question of what did he walk out with? What did it belong to the victim? Did it belong to the thief? So the victim over here is given the opportunity to make a shvua so that he can collect. Number three, Nechbal. Nechbal, a person was a victim of an assault. So therefore, Rashi again illustrates the scenario. Person walks into his house with two nice clean eyes and he walks out with one black eye. So he was assaulted in the house. And now his claim is that guy over there assaulted me. And the alleged perpetrator saying, it was an accident. He slipped, he fell. So another scenario where Nishma Venoto. Excuse me. Another scenario is where a person is going to make a shvua that in order to prevent him from having to pay, but he's nachshon. He has an unfortunate poor reputation of having lied previously in court. So under these circumstances, he can't make a shvua. So what do? You flip. You flip the shvua over to the other guy, and the other guy now is the one who is collecting the money. So in order for him to collect the money, he'll have to make a shvua. Chen vanyal pinkaso. You go to the store owner, and you have rung up a tab. So, and Rashi again goes to the exact scenario in terms of when it is he's going to have to make a shvua, but once again he's going to make a shvua so that he's going to get paid. Okay, the case is a little bit complicated, it's not too bad, take a look at Rashi, but again, we're learning this Mishnah in Shvuos for this last case over here. Ha-pogim shtar shalo be'edim. But then the last case in the Mishnah is as follows. Let's say someone's holding a note, and the lender makes the admission, you know there was already a partial payment. Okay, the lender admits it. So now, so hapogim shtar shlo be'edim. But the Mishnah Shvuah says the following. When is it, when is it that the lender now is going to have to make a Shvuah in order to receive the balance? That's only when the lender admits, yes, I got my first installment, but I got it not in front of witnesses. In order now for the lender to collect the balance of the loan, he's going to have to make a Shvuah. That is a Mishnah. And the diuk now seems to be a very straightforward diuk. Shlo be'edim in be'edim lo. Okay, the Mishnah says that the shvuah is only required when there were no witnesses for that first installment. But seemingly, if there were witnesses for that first installment, he wouldn't have to pay. Sorry, he wouldn't have to make a shvuah. So, lo mi bai kamar, the Gemara says, no. You could argue that. It's a nice diuk, but that's not what the Mishnah means. In fact, the style of the Mishnah falls under the style of Lomi Bai, which means Lomi Bai be'edim devadai tzricha shvua. If there are witnesses, for sure he needs a shvua. Aval shlo be'edim eima tehev kemesha v'aveda v'tishko b'lo shvua. But let's think about it this way. If there are no witnesses, so think about it now from the lender's perspective. There are no witnesses that I received a partial payment. And I'm coming to court and I'm admitting that I already received part of the payment. So he should not have to make a shvuah. You know what he should get? He should get a big pat in the back. They should make like a little party for him. Meaning, can you imagine? He's holding a note that this much money is owed to him, and he's admitting that part of the payment was already paid. You're going to ask him to make a shvuah. What you really should do is congratulate him for his honesty. It's like the Gemara describes it as hashavas aveda. It's like returning a lost item, right? That feeling of when you find a $20 bill in your pocket. I know nowadays that doesn't... That feeling's not as great. It's just $20. But the feeling of finding money in that's money in the low of his pocket. Then now he doesn't have to pay. And now you're going to ask him to make a shvuah? That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. That's the chiddush. Chiddush is that even in that circumstance, he still has to come kamash malan. In that case, he still has to make a shvuah as well. Okay. No? No? What?
Because
you could have
said
that.
Why is it not?
The issue over here is not, we're not talking about the part of the money that he received. We're talking now about the part of the money now he's looking to collect. And because he's looking to collect it, so now again, the uncertainty of, are you sure that's how much I paid you? Are you sure I didn't pay you more than that? Meaning, once he's admitting that he received part of the payment, so it's a little bit suspicious.
So, said,
yeah, it's true he could have said. But we're talking about Shavua, though. We're not talking about overall, he's credible. Overall, we're going to believe him. It's just that the Chachamim imposed a Shvua just to make sure that everyone's fully confident that the first installment was made, the amount of the first installment, and how much the balance is.
This is similar to the Ketubah case.
It's similar, right. And the Gemara wanted to learn from that Mishnah that in a case where the first installment came with witnesses, there doesn't need to be a Shvua, but the Gemara says no, there does need to be a Shvua. Question number two. Ibailu, apogemis ktsuva pachus mishave pruta. I'm sorry, pachus mishave pruta mahu. Question number two of the day is the following. Let's say she has been receiving installments, and really small incremental installments. I can't imagine how this worked exactly, where every time he sees his ex-wife, so he hands her a dime, a nickel, a penny. Okay? In other words, and you know, it doesn't sound like a healthy relationship, but anyway, the point of the Gemara is as follows. Me, I'm reading Kevin Dekadaika Kulehai Kushakama. So now, think about this particular scenario. So now, she's literally got to count pennies, nickels, dimes, right, for the satisfaction of her ksuva. So maybe one could argue that, look, she is identifying every installment that was made, and because every installment was so small, and she gave a subtotal for everything she collected. So maybe one could argue she's telling the truth. Look, she had to be careful about everything received. Or the Gemara says maybe it's just harama, maybe it's just a deception over here, maybe it's not so. So the Gemara says teku. Gemara, this one leaves this question unresolved. E by lehu poches is ksuva mahu. Let's say the Gemara. Let's go now to a different case. It's similar, but it's not the same. And that is where it's not that she admits that she received already a partial payment of the ksuva, but rather the ksuva gets discounted. Ksuva gets discounted, meaning that the ksuva, I'm going to use the numbers that the Gemara is about to use in a moment. Let's say the face value of the ksuva is 1,000 zuz. Okay, the husband was magnanimous at the time of the marriage, right? I'm going to write my wife a thousand zuz ksuva. And she comes to court, and she's holding the note in her hand, and she says, okay, got a divorce now. I'm entitled to collect my ksuva. And it says 1,000 zuz. But she goes to the court, and she says, yeah, but you know what? The face value of the ksuva says 1,000, but between you, me, my ex-husband, it really was 100. That's really all it is. So, me and Rina, I know there are a lot of questions to ask over here, but let's follow the Gemara. Me and Rina, Haina Pagemas. Now, is this basically analogous to Pagima? Meaning, basically, what are we doing? She's asking for a number that's less than the face value of the ksuva. That's Pagemas. Now, it's not the same, as the Gemara is about to point out, Odilma Pogemas Moja Bemitzas. In the case of Pogemas Ksuva, the face value actually represents what the Ksuva was worth. And she's saying that I received part of the payment, and she's asking for the balance. So we're not playing around with the numbers of the Ksuva, she's just simply admitting that she got a partial payment, so for her to collect the balance, she needs to make a Shvua. But Haloka Moja Bemitzas, but this is not a case of Moja Bemitzas, even in, not in the Torah sense, but even the rabbinic sense, it's not Moda B'mitzas. She's not admitting she got paid. All the admission is over here is that this is that face value is not really what the value of that ksuv is. Tashma. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have a braisa. Pachas is tipar shlo b'shvua. So in a case where the ksuva is discounted, so she can collect without a shvua. Ketzad. So the example, ha'isa ksuva se'elav zuz. So let's say ksuva is valued at 1,000. V'amalai kabal ksuva sach. And he says to her, okay, you got paid. Meaning I paid your ksuva. V'hiyo meres, and her response is, lo iskabalti. V'eino alamana. Look, let's make 2 points. Number one, you never paid me. So I don't know what you're talking about over there. Number two, the face value of the ksuva is 1,000. But really, the real value of the ksuva is 100. For reasons we're going to explain. It's for reasons we're going to explain later on. So, elamana. So now, she'll be able to get to collect that. And remember, she's holding the ksuva. So she's got the shtar. She's a holder of the she's a note holder. So she's going to be able to collect, and she doesn't have to make a shvua. Okay, so the Gemara concludes using the Braisa that that in this case of the discounted ksuva, she doesn't have to make a shvur in order to collect. Gemara, now we can ask a basic question, which the Gemara is going to ask. But my Gavya. Now the Gemara says, now slow down for just one moment. She's now going to collect her ksuva holding the note she has in her hand. Even though she fully is aware of the fact and admits that even though the face value of the ksuva is 1,000, but really in actuality the ksuva is only worth 100. Huh? Meaning, and she's going to collect with this note? How does she do that? You collect with a note when the note accurately describes exactly what you're owed. That's not this note. How is she collecting? So b'may gavya b'hayishtara? Is she collecting with this note? Hayishtara chasba b'almahu. This note is worthless. Because she's saying that even though the face value says 1,000, but between us friends over here, it's really worth 100. That note doesn't represent the actual obligation, so therefore it's not a note. So what is she collecting with? What's the power of her collection? So Rav explains, the Mishnah is talking about a very limited scenario, or I should say, not the Mishnah. The Braisa is talking about a very limited scenario, and that's as follows. You know, sometimes, okay, it's out of town, you're not going to find it as much, but sometimes people do things just to impress other people. Okay, not because they are actually valued at that much money, but they just do it to impress others. That's not a new phenomena. That's a very old phenomena. So she says to her husband as follows at the marriage, at the wedding. Look, they're going to read the ksuva at the marriage. right? I want my family to hear a really big number. Okay? So do me a favor. Between you and me, the ksuv is 100. Okay, good. But, or 200 if she's a basula. But, you know what? I'd like my family to hear a big number, so we'll write 1,000. And this is what's called the shtar amana. Shtar amana, we've discussed a number of times, where there's basically an element of faith and trust that exists between the two principal parties involved. Here, that's exactly true. Although I don't know where that trust went, considering the fact that we're talking about a ksuva now, and they're no longer married. But notwithstanding, the explanation of why it is that the ksuva is discounted is because she says that at the time of the marriage, we only set a large number just to sound impressive. But the truth of the matter is, even from the origination, the ksuva was only 100. Okay. That ends our discussion of Pogemis Ksuva, and now we move on to the next case of the Mishnah. Okay, go over the Mishnah. Again, I'm not going to go through the whole Mishnah, but the Mishnah gave a number of scenarios in which a woman is going to have to make a shvu in order to collect. So we just went through the Gemara of Pogemis Ksuva, and now we move on to Eid Echad. So what's happening in this scenario? So she comes to collect her ksuva. Remember, she's still holding the note in her hand. She is the note holder. And the husband says, I paid you. And the husband then marshals in a witness. One witness to say that he in fact paid. In other words, the one witness is prepared to testify that yes, I saw that payment go through. Now, if he had two witnesses, that would be great for him. In other words, that would be proof and evidence. But over here, we're talking about one witness. So one witness, what can one witness do in halacha? Not a whole lot. But what we learned in our Mishnah is that this one witness is able to accomplish is that now, if and when she's going to collect her ksuva, so she's going to have to make a shvua. Good. We're going to go through, first things first, the same dialogue. Savar, Rami Bar Chama Lameimar, Shvua Daraisa. Rami Bar Chama says, oh, here's an example of a Shvua Daraisa. Dichsiv lo yikum edach habish l'cholav on l'chol chatas. So one witness has no ability to create a liability. Now, if you read the Torah very carefully, the Torah says is that one witness cannot create oven, the one witness cannot create chatas. But it's not that he has no efficacy, that one witness can create an obligation to make a shvua. Okay, it's a drush in the Torah. So, and the drush in the Torah is a halacha in the Torah. The Amar Marka Makam Sheshnaim Mechayim Noso Mamon, and the rule is that when two witnesses would have testified and they would have obligated money, Mechayim Noso Mamon, Echad Mechayim Shvua. So if you don't have two, but you only have one witness, so in the scenario where two would have obligated money, one would obligate a shvua. So that means that. Again, Ben, if I may use you, I know it's so confusing because it's Ben and Ben, but Ben, if you come over to me and you say, I owe you money, and then I say, I don't know what you're talking about, and then you bring in one witness. Now, if you brought in two witnesses, so then I have no choice but to pay you. But if you bring in one witness, so I don't have to pay you, but I do have to make a shvua. And by the way, of course, needless to say, failure to make a shvua, meaning if I decline the shvua, so that means, of course, I'm going to have to pay you. That's the halacha of Eid Echad. And that's a shvua min haTorah. And Rami Bar Chama says, and that's our Mishnah, right? And of course, not right. Amar Rav Shichuvas Bedavar, again, it's the same dialogue that we saw by Pogem Shvua. Amar Rav Shichuvas Bedavar, Rav says, I got two things to say about that. Chad, Dechol Enshmayim, Shabbaton Enshmayim, Velo Meshamim. A Shvua in the Torah is one where you make, therefore you don't have to pay, like the example I just gave of the two bents. However, he nishbat v'natelis. In this case over here, she's going to make a shvur so that she could collect her ksuva. Okay, so for that reason, we already see that it's not shvur min haTorah. Two, v'ode nishbat nal kfir shibut karkos. And the second point that we made yesterday, and we're going to make again today, is that the ksuva really is property. Because the ksuva is secured and backed by his property. So really, as much as it is a document, it's really all about the land. And we know, as a rule in shvuos, you don't make a shvur on land. Good. El Amarava Shvua, I'm sorry, El Amarava Midrabanan. The real truth of the matter is that this is a Shvua de Rabbanan, and Kedei Lahafiz Dato Shabal, and the Chachamim imposed her to make a Shvua in order to appease, placate, pacify the husband. Now, I don't know how much pacification we're really talking about over here. When all said and done, he's going to have to pay. But at least now, can you imagine, this is just from the perspective of the husband, meaning it's his belief that he paid the ksuva, and not only does he believe that, but he has one witness that says that he paid the ksuva. And now the halacha is that, but that's only one, it's not two witnesses, he's going to have to pay again. So to, just using the language of the Gemara to make him feel a little bit better. So she's gonna make a shvur in order for it to collect. Okay.
But if he pays the ksuva, doesn't he give?
Right. Why is she hold? In other words, she's holding the note, which gives her the strength of the collection.
If the husband paid it off, don't they destroy it at that point?
They should have destroyed it, right? But again, but in this case, he has a witness. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're right. The evidence is obviously much more in her favor. And again, the best demonstration of that is she's going to collect her ksuva. But he did bring a witness, so she'll make a shvua, and it'll make him a little bit happier. I can't quantify how much happiness that's going to bring. But okay, now epikeachu. Now let's say the husband is bright. What he could do is as follows: maisi leila deshvua daraisa. So he can get an upgrade on the shvua. Meaning that, as far as the husband's position is concerned right now, he's not in the best position. Meaning, right now she's holding the note. He claims he paid the ksuva, but she's holding the note. And the only thing he has to offer as evidence is one witness. And there's a shvur derabanan. The one thing he could do to help himself in this case is he can upgrade from a shvur derabanan to a shvur deraisa. Okay. These next 10 lines of Gemara are going to be a little bit complicated. Because essentially what we're going to do in this next 10 lines of Gemara is we're going to show exactly how it is that he can upgrade from a Shvur D'Rabbanan up to a Shvur D'Raisa. Okay, now, before we get through these next 10 lines of Gemara, and so what? And so now he does get the upgrade. And without going through the specifics, we're going to go through them in just a moment. How does that help his case? All said and done now, it's a Shvur D'Raisa, but as long as she makes a Shvur, she's going to collect her ksuva. So, okay, so an upgrade. What good is that going to be? I don't have anything immensely smart to say over here, other than it's just clear from these next 10 lines of Gemara that obviously a Shvur D'Raisa is more imposing and more intimidating than a Shvur D'Rabbanan. Rashi on the top of this Amud writes as follows. Shvur D'Raisa, the second Rashi on Peches Amud Aleph, Rashi writes, Shehi B'Shem, O Bikinui. First of all, when you're making a Shvur D'Raisa, you're using Shem Hashem, or a derivative name, another name of Shem Hashem. V'Ochei Sefer B'Yado, and you're also holding a Sefer Torah in your hand. And it's clear from Rashi, by Shvur D'Rabbanan, you would do neither. You wouldn't say Shem Hashem, and you wouldn't be holding a Sefer Torah in your hand. K'darmina B'Shuos, V'Chamurahi Ma'od. And Rashi writes that the Shvur D'Raisa is very strict. It's very imposing. So, again, what comes out now is that this entire employment that the husband's going to use to get this upgrade is just going to make it a more impactful Shvua, so that if, in fact, she's not telling the truth, if she's planning on deception, she'll think more than a second time about doing so. I had the Shvua ben a Shvua D'Raisa. Ava Shvua D'Rabbanan, klala ba'ama ke'en shalanu. But a Shvur D'Rabbanan, says Rashi, it's just a klala. Meaning, you know, she'll curse. I mean, obviously, the curse is going on herself. Meaning, there'll be some sort of klala. Rashi says it's very similar to the things we do nowadays. Meaning that Bizman Rashi, and nowadays you don't find any of this, but Bizman Rashi, so, you know, there was, Beis Din was much more popular, much more prevalent, and people would take other people to Beis Din, not to secular courts. And there was some form of, there wasn't the shvua that was imposed, but in other words, we're gonna be very disappointed with you, and I guess they use stronger language. I don't know. I'm only, you know, I can only speculate. But in other words, it was a klala for the person who didn't comply. But if it's a shvua d'araisa, you're holding a sefer Torah in your hand, and you are. And you're using Shem Hashem.
Wait, Rabbanan, you don't hold the sefer Torah?
That's what it sounds like from Rashi. Okay, that's Rashi. There is a discussion. I'll just point it out. We saw Rashi yesterday. Rashi yesterday said that the big difference between a Shvur D'Raisa and Shvur D'Rabbanan is that by Shvur D'Raisa, it doesn't get flipped to the other party. By Shvur D'Rabbanan, it does get flipped. So Rashi yesterday gave one difference between Shvur D'Raisa and Shvur D'Rabbanan. Rashi over here gives another difference, but the truth of the matter is, in our context, in our Gemara, I understand Rashi is demonstrating how a Shvur D'Raisa is more imposing than a Shvur D'Rabbanan. Okay, now let's do it. Okay, these next 10 lines of Gemara are going to be a little bit complicated, because basically it's going to be a way of converting her shvua that she has to make right now, which is only shvua derabanan, up to shvua deraisa. I'm going to go through it quickly, and we'll do the best we can. Yaiv laksuvas. I'm sorry. So ipikechu maisele de shvua deraisa. And here's what he's going to do. Peiches, I'm an aleph, second line down. Yaiv laksuvas abapichatz hada v'samich zadekama asahada basra umokim lulana kamai b'molve. Here's what you do. Now again, let's look at it from the husband's perspective. From his viewpoint, he already paid the ksuva. And again, it's not just his viewpoint. He has one witness who already is prepared to testify. So what he'll do is he'll go to his wife and he'll give her the payment a second time.
A second payment.
And we'll do that in front of one witness. Good. Then what he'll do is he'll take her to court. And then he'll bring with him both witnesses. Now the first witness witnessed what? So he saw a transfer of money. But it can't be the ksuva payment. Why? Because he also has a second witness who is now in court testifying that the second payment, that from his perspective, the only payment, but a second payment was made, and that was a ksuva satisfaction, and she took the money right in front of him. So if the second payment was a ksuva payment, so what's that first?
Loan.
It's not a payment. It's a loan. Okay. Now that it's a loan, so now what just happened? So what just happened now is he wants his money back. He wants his money back from a loan. And now he's coming to her with that first witness and he's saying, okay, I paid you your ksuva payment in front of one witness. That was the second round. In the first round, I gave you a loan. I want my money back. And now she's going to have to make a shvua to say that she doesn't owe the money. And there's one witness saying that she does owe the money. This is a classic scenario of a shvua d'oraisa, where she's going to now have to make a shvua so that she won't have to pay. Good. So the Gemara says, Maskel Rav Shisha Brei Deravidi, Haich Samech Sahad Dekama Asad Basra. So he says, what are you doing? In other words, how can you put together those two witnesses? Rashi writes, Masha Razeh LaRazeh. So the two witnesses don't know of each other's existence. Meaning, to be more clear, more specific, they didn't see what the other saw. And as Rashi goes on to say, Im Tachpor Al Shteihem. So what could she do? She could just simply be in denial mode. And she'll say, no. Ein kan ela eid echad v'tishava v'titol shlishis v'nimtza mafsid. So she'll just simply say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. She'll deny both. She's still the husband not only didn't get upgraded to, well, right now he didn't get upgraded to Shua Daraisa, but now he lost all that money. So we're going to have to, we're going to be doing now is just tweaking this so that he'll be in a position where he doesn't stand to lose anything, any more money, and her shvur is going to be a shvur deraisa. Elam Rashisha Berei Deravidi, Yayiv Laksuvasa, Bapi Sahada Kama, Visahada Basra, Umukim La Lahanach Kamai Bahava. So here's what you'll do. What you'll do is, what he'll do, the husband, is, again, Start it from the beginning of the story. He paid her ksuva, at least that's what he believes. He has a witness who saw that. The witness is ready to testify on his behalf. Then what he'll do is as follows. He'll then go to her. He'll make a second payment for now what is the ksuva. He'll do it in front of two witnesses. And the Gemara points out, he's going to reuse that first witness again for that second payment. Rashi says, you didn't need to reuse that first witness, but as long as he was involved anyway, reuse him. So, and for that second payment, now you do it in front of two witnesses. Now you have two witnesses who witness that second payment. That's a ksuva payment. She can no longer deny it because there are two witnesses who saw that. So we now look back at the first payment. What is that? It's not a ksuva payment, but rather it's a loan. And now he's demanding that money back. And now she's going to have to make a shvua d'oraisa in order to get that money back.
Can she ask for two other witnesses? Can she ask for two other witnesses when the second payment is being done, she would say, I don't accept these two witnesses?
No, she can. She can, no. No. Once he brings two witnesses, that's it. Once you have two witnesses, that's the way the Torah operates. Once you have two witnesses, they are They stand as evidence and proof. So Maskel Rav Ashi Hakati Yechol Lameimar Beis Ksuva Savai. So Rav Ashi says, okay, but again now, on the second payment, fine, there's nothing to talk about. There are two witnesses. On the first payment, so she could say, look, you only have one witness that you paid me. And I'm going to make now the following argument. My argument is going to be that when he married me, he actually gave me two ksuvas. Now, is that highly unusual? Beyond. Highly unusual. But look, we just got off the heels of discussing a scenario in which a ksuva was discounted. Meaning ksuva was really 100, but they gave it a face value of 1,000, even though it was really 100. So yes, of course, it is highly unusual that the husband would be writing not one, but two ksuvas to his wife, but that's her claim. I understand a show of devotion from the man from the husband to the wife. It's unusual. Yes. So the Gemara says based ksuvas havai elam Ravashi hu demodelahu. So Ravashi says we're not going to change the construct. Everything stays the same. There was only one witness for the first payment. There were two witnesses for the second payment. But in order to block her claim that there were two ksuvas, what the husband's going to need to do is he's going to have to tell the witnesses, look, here we are. I'm paying her the ksuva. I paid her previously, but she's claiming she never received it. So here's what I'm doing. I'm telling you right now, witnesses, and she's there, she's hearing the conversation, that this is going to be for the ksuva, and you admit there's only one? Yeah, there's only one. You just never paid me. And he pays it, and so that will block her ability to claim that there was a second ksuva that she got paid for. Okay. So, and all this got us to the point of what? Meaning, he's still paying her, but it got it to the point now that she's going to make a shvua, now it's no longer going to be a shvua d'rabbanan, now it's going to be a shvua d'oraisa. Okay. Nechasim mishu badim. We move on to the next case of the Mishnah, and the next case of the Mishnah, another scenario in which she's going to have to make a shvua is when she's making a collection from properties that were encumbered. Encumbered and sold. In other words, she goes to the husband, her ex-husband, and she says, okay, I want to make ksuva payment. And he says, I'm penniless, I'm really sorry. So she is a note holder, meaning she's a lien holder. So that means that she'll go and she'll chase down whoever bought that land and she'll collect from them. Tanan Hasam, the Gemara turns to a Mishnah in Shavuos. V'chena yisamim lo yiparu ela b'shvua. When the orphans are collecting a loan, or the Mishnah here is talking about a receivable, the estate is holding a receivable, and the estate now wants to collect on that. So in order for the estate to collect, so they have to make a shvua. Miman. Now the Gemara says, wait a second. That Mishnah and Shavuos, what are we talking about? We're not talking about receiving payment from the orphans. We're talking about the orphans actually collecting based on a note that they're holding. Ilema milove. Are we talking about where they're collecting from the actual borrower himself? The principal borrower? So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Dad was able to collect, and dad didn't have to make a shvua. And we are standing in dad's place. We inherited that receivable. We should be no worse than dad, meaning we're holding the note. Let's collect without a shvua. Ela hachikamar. So the Gemara says, the way to understand the Mishnah is, both principals are dead. Both the lender and the borrower died, and now we're looking at the orphans of both estates. So now, one estate goes to the other estate and says, your father owed us our father money, so we're coming to collect. But now, because the estate is collecting from another estate, so in other words, even though it's orphans against orphans, but halacha is, anytime you collect from orphans, you gotta make a shvua.
Now, if an orphan is a minor, how does he do a shvua?
Well, the orphans as they are minors are not going to be making a shvua, so you have to wait till they get older, or maybe maybe the apotropos is making the shvua, but I'm not sure about that point. Any note holder, I understand. Any note holder who goes and collects from an estate has to make a shvua. It's a takana that was made. There was an enactment that was made to protect the orphans.
Shvua what?
Shvua that, yeah, there's not much, that's an excellent question. There's not much that they can actually testify to. But what they're going to testify to is that to our knowledge, Dad never collected that loan. That's all. But it's a level of security. It's there just to give one more layer of protection for the orphans. Yeah. Correct. In other words, to their knowledge. In other words, to the best of their knowledge, Dad never got paid. Typically, that's true, but not necessarily. Okay. Amar Rav Zikr, Amar Rav Yehuda, Lo Shanu, Lo Shamru Yisomim. Amar Lanu Abba Levisi Uparasi. Ava Amar Lanu Abba Lo Levisi Afa Shvu Lo Yiparu. So the Gemara makes a statement in the name of Rav Yehuda, which at first glance sounds a little off, and it's going to sound a little off even at second glance. And that is that: what if the estate who has to pay? Let's say they make the following claim. You know, Dad told us right before he died that he doesn't need to pay back because there was never a loan. In other words, our dad denied the loan altogether. So under those circumstances, Rav Yehuda says, the other estate, the collecting estate, will therefore not collect with a shua, they won't collect at all. Matkif la Rava. So Rava says, I don't understand. When you say that there was no loan, and there's a note being held against you, so when you say that there was no loan, what you're really saying is, I didn't pay it. A denial of the loan altogether, in the face of a note, is a totally meaningless statement, and it's pretty much, in fact, it's evidence just to the opposite. It means you didn't pay. So, so the Gemara says, you're right. Okay, it can't be that just because the kids, quoting their father, said, you know, there was never such a loan, so they're not going to pay. It can be. That can be true. So, if, let's say, the kids of the borrower say to the kids of the lender, you know what Dad told us? Dad told us there was no such loan. So under those circumstances, Nifram Shalab Shvua. At that point in time, they're showing their cards. And that is, there was a loan, Dad never paid it, they're holding a note. So under those circumstances, the other estate can come and they can collect, and they don't need a Shvua. Why? Because by saying I never borrowed the money is tantamount to saying I didn't pay you back. It's an admission on the part of the kids quoting their father that Dad never paid back the loan, and so therefore the other estate gets to collect with even without a shvua. Okay, she's coming to collect her ksuva. We're back to the Mishnah. We're now in the fourth case of the Mishnah, in a scenario in which she's going to have to make a shvua in order to collect, and that is, he skipped down. The ex-husband skipped town, and now she wants to collect. So she turns to Basin. She says to Basin, okay, help me out. Help me with some seizure of assets. In other words, go and collect for me. Here's the ksuv. I'm holding my hand. Under these circumstances where he's not there, so she'll collect, but she has to make a shvua. So Amar Avachabar, I'm sorry, Amar Avachasar Habira. Rashi says that's his nickname. An interesting nickname. Amar Rav Acha bar Sarabira, Maisav Aleph Nei Rabbi Yitzchak Ban Tochia, V'Amar Lo Shanu Ella L'Ktuvas Isha, Mishum Chino. Gemara says, look, interesting. We're now talking about the ability of a borrower to collect his receivable, his note, even in the absence of the borrower. Okay? Common. Maisav B'chol Yom. So the Gemara says, this is a special enactment that was done for women in their collection of the Ktuva. However, a regular lender cannot collect his debt unless the borrower is present, is around.
Is that for the get? The husband gave a get and then out tell?
Huh? Yeah. You give or get.
He gave a get and then...
And then, in terms of the ksuva, so yeah, he skipped. So the reason why we'll do this specifically for women is because of endearment. Now remember, Rashi told us, we discussed a couple days ago, the idea is that you want to make marriage palatable to women. And so anytime you make a collection of a ksuva a little bit easier. So that means then the women will talk and the women will say, you know, the ksuva is there to protect you. Okay, and here's a good illustration, here's a good example. Even though the husband skips town, but Basin is going to go ahead and collect on your behalf. Avaba chovlo. But what he's going to argue is that a regular creditor, a regular lender, cannot collect his loan unless the borrower is there. Rav Amar Rav Nachman. Rav says in the name of Rav Nachman, I disagree. Afilu b'chov shelo yei kol echavecha noto ma'osav shechavero v'olach v'yoshev b'medina seyam. No, everyone can collect their obligation even if the borrower is no longer present. And if you don't say this, argues Rav Nachman, so what are you going to have? You're going to have a lot of people who are going to come up with kooky ideas. You know, I'll borrow a whole lot of money, and then, right, I already have my retirement plan. Okay, the only thing I'm disclosing is that the Florida Keys is involved in my retirement plan. But in other words, I'll just borrow a lot of money, I'll skip town, and Florida Keys is not that far. I got to be a little more creative, a little more imaginative. So anyway, but I'll skip town, and that's it. And my estate will be protected. they're not going to go after. I can only pay back if I'm there. So v'atonol das b'fnei lofin. And the Gemara says. Then we're going to see a lot of this in the fifth parak of Gittin. By the way, if you notice, I've been quoting lately a lot the fifth parak of Gittin. I happen to be learning it these days. So it's not. Yeah, correct. It's not impressive. That's not a memory issue. That's just I happen to be learning the fifth parak of Gittin right now. So, but anyway, we'll see a lot of this in the fifth parak of Gittin, where the Gemara there speaks about this idea that you want to stimulate lending. It's good for the economy. And so if the lender knows that the only way he's going to be able to collect is only if the borrower is present, and once the borrower skips, he's not going to be able to collect, lenders will not be lending money. And the Chachamim are aware of this. And therefore, they afforded the power to the lender to collect his loan, even if the borrower is not around. That's a different issue. It's not the same issue. Okay, Rabbi Shimon Omer Kozman Shetovas Tzuva V'chulei. Okay, and now we turn to the last part of the Mishnah, and that is Rabbi Shimon. Okay, let's start. No, let's not. It's a long run on sentence. Okay, so let's pause over here, and we'll start tomorrow. Okay, the question we're going to deal with tomorrow is Rabbi Shimon made a good decision on my part. Rabbi Shimon made a statement at the end of the Mishnah, which is really, it's at face value, is unintelligible, and the Gemara is going to make it intelligent. So that's what we'll do tomorrow. So again today, we finished up the cases in the Mishnah of cases where a woman, in order to collect her ksuva, is going to have to make a shvua. The Gemara gave analysis. The Gemara spoke about a possibility of an upgrade from a shvua d'rabbanan up to a shvua d'araisa, and other basic issues in terms of the halachas of making a shvua in order to collect a loan.